time to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and this is the Rider Dynasty podcast. Tonight, we bring you training camp battles, quarterback and tight end edition. We will look at six muddled position groups and help you invest your draft capital wisely. I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts. You can find them on Twitter at Dynasty Dorks and at JF Hornets 25. It's Dave and Justin. How you guys doing?
I'll go first. It's been a great night. Just got off a show and I'm ready to do another one.
You, Justin? Your mic is not working. So I will move on. And pulling up a chair for the first time on the Rod Pod, you may know him from his amazing content at Dynasty Vipers or his work with Fantasy Points. I know him from the King's Classic and his fantastic Patreon channel. Love your Fantasy Heat Check. Love it. Plus, I'm a sucker for bald guys with facial hair. You can find him on Twitter at Matt Donnelly FF. Mr. Matt Donnelly, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great here. We're just hitting rodeo season up north, so I got the old cowboy hat. It's dusted off. The old cowboy boots, they're ready to go. I just finished up wrapping up all this writing, all this video content. So now it's time to kind of take it easy right up into the King's Classic here. A little bit of relaxing, kind of consume some content rather than being consumed by it.
I like that. Now, I also want in. I saw your tweet earlier today on the Leonard Fournette diet plan. How do you go from 260 to 240 like in a week?
I don't know how that's even possible, man. I've been trying just about everything here right now. I started drinking water recently. I'm not a big water guy. I've never been a water guy. So I started drinking. I made this rule to myself that every cup of coffee I'm going to have, I'm going to drink like a big giant, I don't know what that is, at least a liter of water for each cup of coffee. Well, what I didn't take into account for is I usually have four cups of coffee before lunch. So you take those four cups of coffee, you add 4 liters of water. The rest of my afternoon, I'm basically getting paid to pee. I mean, that's basically what the rest of my afternoon looks like.
You're going to need to get like a catheter if you're going to start drinking that much water.
I don't know. I don't know how this is even working to lose weight. Like, was Leonard Fournette all water weight and just kind of put a garbage bag over himself for a couple of days and let it go? I don't know. Because he lost 15 pounds. I've gained 15 pounds. I don't think I've ever lost 15 pounds at any point in my life.
Well, every time he loses weight, I think I find it for him. And I think that's how it works, buddy. All right. Well, before we get into tonight's episode, we are giving away an autographed DeAndre Swift Lions jersey. All you need to do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Once we hit 100 reviews, we are going to draw a winner. So look for the link in the show notes. And as always, please do all of the typical YouTube and podcast things. Like, subscribe, follow, and leave a comment. It helps us grow and provide you with the content that you are looking for. Gentlemen, let's go to the main topic. Last episode, Mace Riney from IDP Guys joined us to talk about which wide receivers to take from muddled position groups. If you missed the episode, please check it out on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. Tonight, we continue with the quarterback and tight end edition. So after trading away Matt Ryan this offseason for a third round pick, the Falcons signed Marcus Mariota and drafted Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati in the third. Matt, reports are that Mariota is far ahead of Ridder so far. Are you drafting Mariota?
I'm avoiding both of them, to be honest with you. I mean, if you're in one of those things where it's a super flex type league and you need that third or fourth kind of quarterback just on the bench, maybe you're grabbing Mariota. I don't know if he holds his job for the entire season. And I don't necessarily think Ridder's a better option than him right now either. The good thing about this for both these quarterbacks, for the Falcons more in particular, is they're very similar type quarterbacks. The fact that they can both move the ball with their arm a little bit, they can both move it with their legs a little bit. So they don't have to change their offense too much going from one to the other. But I was watching some of that training camp footage, and the accuracy, man, it just wasn't there for either of these quarterbacks early on. So that big time concern there for me. It was like, what a grab by Kyle Pitts. And I'm sitting there like, that was a horrible throw. Yeah, good grab by Kyle Pitts. But let's talk about this throw a little bit more, because that's going to be a bigger deal when it's all said and done. Now, we know Mariota here is probably good for Kyle Pitts. I mean, look what he did with Delanie Walker there, that stretch with Arthur Smith as a coach there in Tennessee. I think Delanie Walker was a top five tight end three consecutive years. So Mariota probably gives you a little bit more value for Kyle Pitts than maybe Desmond Ridder does as he learns the game right now. I mean, the guy's a winner. There's no doubt about it. At Cincinnati, Desmond Ridder was a winner.
Well, we love winners. Dave, you know, we talked a little bit. Matt mentioned Kyle Pitts, a large catch radius, which helps. Drake London, large catch radius, which helps. Are you throwing a chip on either of these gentlemen?
No, and I generally play in super flex leagues, and I can understand the allure of trying to get one of these rushing quarterbacks. If you go and get Mariota and have, you know, have him as your third or fourth quarterback, that's fine. And if he falls to me and it's just like, okay, I'm either my ninth receiver or Mariota, maybe I'll go for it. But at the end of the day, I'm not targeting either of these guys. When you have quarterbacks with rookies behind them that are, you know, you're not really sure about it, I always look at the bye week and see what's going to happen. It's a week 14 bye. It's kind of a weird situation here. So there's not going to be a natural transition. But, you know, at the end of the day, if it goes, you know, you could see and easily see a situation where by week 8, Desmond Ridder is in, and you just don't want to bank on that with Mariota. And same with Ridder. I mean, you're not paying a whole lot for him, but I think everybody kind of expects that they're probably going to be in the QB market next year.
Makes sense. All right, gentlemen, next up is one of my favorite cities to visit and least favorite to drive in, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, Justin, Pickett is going off the board before Trubisky in redraft, yet Tomlin has Kenny running with the third team. Are you drafting either of these gentlemen? All right, your mic still is not working, so I will check with Dave.
Yeah, I think Trubisky is, you know, I think he's someone you can target. Again, we're talking super flex leagues in this situation. These guys are borderline, you know, probably not even borderline. These guys are I think 25th and 26th in most kind of a ranking situation. It's not guys that you're going to have in your top 12, not guys that really are in your 15, 16 spot. But I think Trubisky has a good situation, and I think the Steelers are a patient organization that can let Pickett sit back for a year. They have that fifth year option. They have that extra year where they can redshirt him, get him ready to go. And you know, if Trubisky obviously gets off to a bad start, then that's going to be tough. But if he gets off to a good start, I think Trubisky can hold the job, and he's not going to have to light the world on fire to do so.
He had a tough situation, Matt, in Chicago. Do you think he has learned from this experience?
I think he's growing as a passer there. I think he got thrown into Chicago maybe a little bit earlier than he was ready for. I mean, when you're drafted that high, you're going to get in there. It's that simple. Everything that we heard from Buffalo last year, learning from Josh Allen there, learning that Brian Daboll type system, I think that really helped him, getting an actual coach to kind of coach him along. Now, coming to Pittsburgh, we're already hearing it. He threw a couple incomplete passes today, and you hear the crowd go, put Pickett in there. They're already calling for Pickett. I don't know if that's going to make a difference, but I'll tell you what. I don't know where I'm drafting either one of these guys, but any one of them that comes in, they could have some value in super flex leagues. If you look at what Pittsburgh did last year, I think they threw like 40-some times per game. Short passes and stuff, but when you got playmakers like Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Najee Harris had like 74 receptions last year. I mean, you've got playmakers who can make something happen with the ball. You don't have to throw down the field very far. And we know that both Pickett and Trubisky do have their issues. I mean, we've joked about Trubisky's vision being left-sided, only being able to throw one side of the field. And we've talked about basically if Trubisky can only throw to half the field, well, Pickett's only got about half the size of a regular man's hands when it comes to throwing the ball. So he's got his own issues there as well. And he's got obviously that little bit of a learning experience coming from the pros. We're talking about a guy who broke basically all of Dan Marino's records at Pittsburgh University there. And the thing I like most, I was sitting in bed last night with the wife, and we're watching maybe his Community or maybe, it was Full House. It was a Full House episode, like way back when. And DJ was wearing a Shippensburg sweater. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but Kenny Pickett's dad was an all-pro linebacker basically at Shippensburg University. So I was like, as soon as I see DJ Tanner wearing the Shippensburg sweater, I was like, yes, we got to talk about Kenny Pickett today.
It was a sign from God. It was a sign from God or Danny Tanner.
It one could or be the Danny other. Tanner just kind of let us know here what's going on. But so, yeah, for either one of these guys, I don't know how to play, but I know whoever gets in there is going to have an opportunity, not necessarily going to succeed. But, hey, we saw a half a man there in Ben Roethlisberger last season go out there and still put up a little bit of production. He was a viable bye-week filler. If you're looking at it, he's not a starter. He's not a super flex. But if you needed a guy in a pinch, I think both Kenny Pickett and Trubisky, whoever's under center, can do that for you.
My only concern with Pickett is how long he holds on to the ball. Like, the one thing Ben did last year was pass fast. He didn't wait for anything. He took two steps, three steps back, and that ball was out of there. So I'm hoping Pickett can pick that up.
Well, you got a veteran last year. Ben Roethlisberger is a veteran. That offensive line was terrible. Arguably the worst offensive line in the National Football League. So if you're going to have a young quarterback, like you said, if he's patting that ball when he steps back, you're going to get it, especially in that AFC North. You cannot take your time there. There's some guys that can flat out get after the quarterback there. So I think that's why we're going to see Trubisky early on, especially I don't think we see Pickett until week 8, week 9, or when the Pittsburgh Steelers fade out of the playoff race. They're not going to be there when it's all said and done. They're not going to stick around like they were last year. That AFC is too competitive now. The arms race in the AFC heated up so much in the offseason, and Pittsburgh got left too far behind. And it's not a bad thing for Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh's been one of those teams that's been too bad to win it, but too good to draft it. You know what I mean? So this could be a good thing for Pittsburgh right now. They feel like Pickett is that franchise quarterback. Now they can start putting the pieces around him with some good value in the draft capital moving forward.
Dave, when is Pittsburgh's bye?
They actually have a perfect switch there. Matt said 8 or 9. They have bye week on week 9.
There you go.
So in that scenario, the Steelers would have, you know, bye week, week 9, and then he would open up against New Orleans on November 13th.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I just wanted to hit on two other situations for quarterbacks. Real quickly, Matt, Kyle Shanahan has stated definitively that this is Trey's team. Do we agree with him? Do we believe Kyle Shanahan?
I do. I mean, we've seen it here. They're chopping Garoppolo right now. I love fake news. I mean, it's first day of training camp, and we're already getting Garoppolo to the Giants for 2 seconds. That's fake. Don't worry about that. That was nothing today. That was absolutely nothing. The 49ers, they're going to try and trade Garoppolo. I don't know if they're going to have a dance partner. It takes two to dance, and I don't think anyone is going to pay up a second or even a third for Garoppolo. And I sure as heck know they're not going to take on $24 million. It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, you have to basically, if you're going to trade Garoppolo, you're basically going to say, hey, you're with us, but you're not with us. Stay at home. Don't get hurt. And we're going to wait 2-3 weeks, and hopefully a team with a starter goes down. A good competitive team with a starter goes down. I think that's where San Francisco is because they also don't want to release him and lose him for nothing. So they're kind of in that tough place. And they also know they have to give Trey Lance this opportunity. He was 41 of 71 last year, 603 yards passing. He also had a bunch of rushing yards kind of scattered in there. We know what he can do with his legs. There's no question about it. And here's the thing with Trey Lance. I don't know if he's that accurate passer yet, but I think with a little good coaching there, he could be on that same trajectory as guys like Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts. I'm not going to put him there yet, but the arm talent may be better than both those quarterbacks.
Yeah, and he's definitely mobile enough to put up the rushing stats. Justin, where are you on the Garoppolo v. Lance situation? Not quite, my friend. All right. So the second situation I wanted to check out. Ryan Tannehill has a bit of a dip last year in his resurgence, finishing as QB 15 after a QB 7 finish in 2020. Matt, if Tannehill doesn't come out strong, is there any chance that Willis sees the field?
This is all going to depend on where the Titans are. I don't expect the Titans to win this division. This is going to be the Colts division through and through. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind here when it comes to who's the best team in this division. One team got better in the Colts. The other got worse by letting A.J. Brown go. I'm sure you got Treylon Burks coming in to help. Again, a rookie. I don't think that's the answer. You got Robert Woods and Treylon Burks as your 1-2 combination in the passing game. That's a bit of a downgrade, in my opinion, than even Julio Jones and A.J. Brown last year. So for me, Tannehill, the one thing Tannehill has had going for him is his efficiency. He doesn't need a lot of throws to make them count, especially when you're facing, when Derrick Henry's facing 8-man, 9 in the box, The difference is now he's facing those kind of fronts with five screws in his foot. I'm down on Derrick Henry this year compared to most people, because I don't know if he can handle that workload with AJ Brown no longer being there, facing as many people he does in the box, and having those screws in the foot. I mean, there was a Jones fracture last year that kind of held him out of there. So you add that all together, that means you could see Tannehill try and pass the ball a little bit more. I don't think that's a good recipe for success in Tennessee. And I also don't believe that Malik Willis is ready. So I don't think we're going to see Malik Willis even start a game unless there's some injuries here, because Malik Willis, he still needs some development. He is straight Konomi code right now. There's no throwing quite yet. We watched him throw balls against Liberty or with Liberty last season there. He's got the talent. We've seen it strung together a little bit, but there's a reason why he was being hyped as a first round draft pick and then went in the third round. So for me, that's telling me all that I need to know about that situation there in Tennessee.
Dave, when do you think we could see that switch? If there is going to be one.
I don't think we see one at all. They have an early bye week at week six. And, you know, the Titans have overcome. Last year, they overcame a lot to get to where they were at. They had excellent coaching staff. They have a great scheme. They're not going to ask Ryan Tannehill to go out and be Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. So, you know, at the end of the day, at week six at the bye, they could be at a very bad spot. They got the Giants week one, which is probably going to be a win, but then they got Buffalo, Las Vegas, the Colts, and then Washington. So what are they, 2-3 going into the bye, and they come back and get the Colts after that. So I don't think that's going to be enough for Malik Willis to get in there. I just don't think he's ready, but I do think that the Titans could be a sneaky team to be interested in on a quarterback next year. You know, and like I said, I don't think Willis is ready to go, and I don't think they're going to be that far out of the hunt that they're going to want to throw him in week seven, week six, like something like that.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Now, before we move on to tight ends, I want to talk about some of our favorite QB trade targets. Dave?
Yeah, I'll start it off, and it's Kirk Cousins. It is someone that it just – he's always – you know, he's just always available. He's, you know, kind of the nobody wants him. And, you know, you just, okay, I'll just let you guys pass him, and I'll take him. And, you know, I love the direction of this offense and this team where it's going. They have some really fun dynasty pieces. I'm an Irv Smith fan. Dalvin Cook, I think, is in for a big year. But, like, they're moving on from old curmudgeon-y, you know, Zimmer to go and have an offensive minded coach. And granted, this guy's got, you know, he's going to have a learning curve, but anyone that's come from the Kyle Shanahan McVay tree, it's worked. And Kirk Cousins, remember how well he did in the Shanahan offense back when they played together in Washington. So this offense is not going to be something that's totally, you know, a big change for him. He did a nice job, you know, cutting down on the turnovers last year. I just think he's just perennially, downgraded in the rankings, and people always want the new thing. And then just to throw a thing out there about like 6-point passing touchdowns. I don't know if all your leagues do it or half your leagues do it. Check your league settings. If it's a 6-point passing passing touchdown, it's going to benefit guys like Kirk Cousins that don't rush the ball that much. But you know, when you're thinking about upside, don't forget about the passing. If this guy throws 30 touchdowns and 4,000 yards, who cares if he only rushes for 10?
Yeah, they are definitely loaded with weapons there, Dave. Matt, who do you have as a trade target? Well,
I got a couple guys there, but just kind of touch on Cousins. We're talking about a guy who's throwing a touchdown 30 straight games, who's averaged 4,000 yards and 31 touchdowns over the last 4 years. And if you look at last season, he had a better PFF grade, a passer rating, and touchdowns, and fewer interceptions than Kyler Murray. And yet we're talking about Kirk Cousins as QB 14, QB 15. This is a guy who's going to be in the running. He's 14th in points per game since 2018. This is a guy who is productive. Another guy who is productive here, I'm just going to pull up my spreadsheets here, is a guy I'm all in on. And maybe it's a little bit of homerism, but you know what? It's fantasy football. Draft guys you like. I'm a big Derek Carr guy. Carr is a good quarterback. We saw what he was able to do last year. Fifth in passing yards with 4,804. Fifth in completion percentage. Second in passes greater than 20 yards. fifth in passes greater than 40 yards. That was the main one of the main criticisms of Derek Carr in the past. He wasn't willing to push the ball down the field. And still, Gruden was probably still getting frustrated with him there about him not pushing down nearly enough. So when you look at things here, he's the last time he had wide receivers this caliber, you have to go back to basically Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper there when they both posted those 1,000-yard seasons. And in that little bit of an area, that season, Derek Carr actually got 7 MVP votes in that season. So you're talking about a guy who is getting some talent surrounding him, Waller, Renfro, and Devontae Adams. And the other thing that got knocked on Derek Carr last year is, sure, those passing numbers are great, but you, for fantasy, you need to get the ball in the end zone. So what do? You go get a guy who basically has 73 career touchdowns, averaging almost 10 touchdowns per season. That's going to help those touchdown numbers one way or the other. And again, like Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr seems to be a whipping boy for fantasy, where we don't appreciate him nearly as much as we should.
I have to agree with you. I was able to trade 116 in a 16-team league last year for Derek Carr Superflex. And I love it. I was so happy with that trade. But nobody, you're right. I mean, people thought that I got taken on that trade, and I was excited to get him at that point. You know, somebody who I'm looking at is Jared Goff. Now, obviously, I'm not pushing Jared Goff in a 1QB league. However, if you're in a super flex or 2QB, you could do much worse than Jared Goff as your QB2. He is currently going off the board as QB26, yet Football Outsiders has him projected as QB20. I'd be happy to throw a mid to late second round rookie pick in on him in a super flex league rather than reaching for a rookie like Willis or Corral or Howell and hoping something happens. I'll take the floor that Goff comes with. And I mean, they added Jamison Williams and DJ Chark.
And they're getting bodies back. TJ Hawkinson, healthy. I mean,
DeAndre Swift, healthy.
DeAndre Swift, healthy. That's enough there. This is not a good team. I guess for fantasy, the points are going to be spread out pretty evenly. But who benefits from that? Jared Goff. And he's playing for his livelihood right now, because if the Lions struggle, and I don't expect him to. I mean, this is one of those teams that has taken on the identity of their coach. I'm watching Dan Campbell out there with his men doing up-downs during training camp. As a former player that didn't play nearly as high as these guys, I mean, if I see my coach out there doing these up-downs, I am getting in. I'm ready to run through a wall for these guys. This was a team that was depleted of talent last year, and yet they made some games closer than they needed to be. Now they've added talent on the offensive side of the ball. Jared Goff, I agree with you. I think he's one of those sneaky upside type plays that is going to give you a couple QB1 weeks along the way.
Yeah.
And he's protected. So that's a top 10 offensive line. So first, let me say thank you guys for being patient with me, because holy cow, technology has beat me up tonight. So JJ, you are the best, by the way, for just dealing with that right there. And Dave, you always know you're one of my favorites. So Matt, great to meet you, buddy. Anyway, back to the Jared Goff. I think that's a really good point, because top 10 offensive line, you've got some offensive pieces coming in. You've got a defense that's okay, so they're going to have to play catch up a lot of times. And so I think Jared Goff is a really good one to pick there. So glad to be joining finally.
We're glad to have you. And why don't you come in with one of your trade targets?
Yeah, so kind of on the same lens with you on Jared Goff is Daniel Jones. So I'm one of the ones that reacted a little bit to the fake news today. I was like, oh, man, all my Daniel Jones stuff is going to go out the window. But I think Daniel Jones is a really good floor person to look for in Dynasty, because you can get him for relatively nothing. He's got obviously plenty of offensive pieces in that Giants offense. You've got Dable coming over, who everybody thinks is a little bit of a quarterback whisperer. We'll see what he can do after coming from Josh Allen to Daniel Jones. I'm a little bit partial to Daniel Jones just because I watched him when he was at Duke University. And so I just think that that's a guy that you can get for relatively nothing, and he's going to play this year, whereas these rookie quarterbacks that you're going to go after are 2 and 3 year projects that may never come to fruition. So whether Daniel Jones gives you nothing in 2 or 3 years, he'll give you something now instead of the devil that you don't know.
Yeah, we're going live at 10 tonight because I actually was doing a mock draft with Gary Davenport before this, and I took Saquon in the second, and I got Daniel Jones in the 14th as my backup. only for the stack, because I think Saquon might be the wide receiver one and RB one on that team. And for all the reasons you said, I mean, Daboll's in town. He's either going to get better or I'm going to cut him for a kicker. So I'm not too nervous about the capital I put into Daniel Jones. So I think he's a great late round flyer. Matt, do you have anybody else?
Yeah, I just got to touch here on Daniel Jones just real quick again. I mean, it's all about that return of investment. If you're not paying a whole lot to get him, there's no risk. But the reward can be great. We talk about these weapons here from Barkley to Tony. Tony, I love this year as a wide receiver. Then you've got Sterling Shepard. When he's healthy, he's pretty good. Wandell Robinson, they're going to line him up a little bit. Kenny Golladay looks like maybe he comes back to his 2019, 2018 Detroit Lions type days. There's weapons for Daniel Jones to look good. And he's also got that Konomi ability too, where he's not afraid to run the ball. He can't get all the way to the end zone because he usually trips around the five-yard line. But, I mean, he can run the ball. I mean, I think he had one of the top rushing speeds that last season per next-gen stats. But for me, another one of those quarterbacks right now, and he's finally starting to get a little bit of that hype, is Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, he's a guy I'm going after too. We talk about Derek Carr not getting that respect. I think Tua's where Carr was a couple years ago. I mean, I think Carr's starting to get that respect now, a little bit more now with Devontae Adams in place. Well, Tua, we're talking about a guy with a 66.1 completion percentage in the red zone last year, right? He led all quarterbacks there. His completion percentage against the Blitz in 2020, or since 2020, is seventh best in the league at 66%. He's been – when Tyreek Hill says that Tua Tagovailoa is one of the more accurate passers he's ever seen, he's not lying. I don't know if he's as good as Patrick Mahomes, but speaking of accuracy – the completion percentages, the numbers, they don't lie. And he was doing this not with Travis Kelce, not with Tyreek Hill. He kind of got Jalen Waddle there last season. But who did he have prior to that? Who did he have in 2020? I mean, the receivers weren't there. Now he's got the receivers. He's accurate. And guess what? You don't need to throw 80-yard bombs to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle for them to score. You can throw negative 3-yard passes, and they're going to score 90-yard passes. That's how talented these receivers are in Miami. And it's not just – it's just saw those two. You've got Mike Gesicki going up the seam. I'm not a big Gesicki guy, but I'm trying to figure out who's going to play the slot, because I think every single player on this team plays at least 66% of their snaps out of the slot. You got Cedric Wilson there. You got Lynn Bowden. You got Chase Edmonds coming in there. Finally, a bit of a running back. I mean, Miles Gaskins was RB25 in PPR last year, but Chase Edmonds is an upgrade, especially in the passing game. Yep. So you look at all these weapons that Tua is going to get. I think we're going to see him in this Mike McDaniel offense that we saw coming over from San Francisco, how they use Deebo. I think we're going to see Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle both be used in similar fashions from time to time. So it's going to leave defenses trying to guess at where the attack is coming from, which is going to leave seams open all over the place. It'll just be a matter of Tua finding those holes.
You know, I'm always amazed, and maybe it's because I'm old, at how little patience people have for quarterbacks anymore in the NFL. Like, there's no more coming in, being okay as a rookie, and then slowly getting better every year until you're great. And it just seems like Tua came in as supposedly the best prospect, right, in a generation at QB. And then he had a rough year. He was injured. And everybody was like, oh, he sucks. Why don't you just pump the brakes a little bit and give the guy a chance?
He was coming off a significant injury. It wasn't just, I don't want to say this in any negative fashion, it wasn't like an ACL. We're talking about the hip. It was like basically the bone was blown right through the hip, the whole femur, whatever you want to call, right through the back end of the hip. Not a good thing, especially if you are a passer trying to drive that ball down the field. You kind of need all that leverage to kind of snap through. He didn't have that. And you're right. As fantasy managers, we've been spoiled by this quarterback infusion the last few years. Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert came on like gangbusters, so that means Tua Tagovailoa must be a bust. Well, we're not calling Trevor Lawrence a bust, and yet Tua is better than Trevor Lawrence. So where do we want to put our placement of where we value these quarterbacks?
Be patient. Be patient. All right, Justin, before we move on to tight ends, was there any news we wanted to hit on?
Absolutely. So we've got some big news coming out. So, like, finally, cue the gift from The Rock, right? Finally, Michael Thomas comes off of the pup list. What is that telling everyone? Is anybody buying into some Michael Thomas? We've got some, obviously, some stock that's fallen over the last couple of years. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was wide receiver one in 2019, 2018. he's a guy that I think that's really going to be, you know, he's always going to be good as long as he's there. And so what are we thinking right now with the news with Michael Thomas coming off the PUP, guys?
Where are you, Matt, with Michael Thomas?
I need to see it before I can believe it. We're looking at a guy, when he's on, when Michael Thomas is on, there is no question he was one of the best receivers in the game. But you cannot, there's not been one instance throughout the history of the National Football League where players miss two full seasons and come back to perform at the level he was at before he went down with injury. That has never happened. Could Michael Thomas be the outlier? Absolutely. But in fantasy football, we're basically predictive analysis. I mean, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. It's all about prediction. And I don't have a baseline for coming back from something like this. I mean, Will Fuller's been out for 2 years with a finger injury, but we're talking about Michael Thomas here. He's looked good. We've watched him through the running. He's calling out fantasy football doctors right now on Twitter. So, hey, shout out to all those fantasy football doctors out there. There are some good ones, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, Michael Thomas took some shots at them along the way. And I don't know if it's necessarily fair because, like I said, we haven't seen him come back. We haven't seen him on the field. But last time we did see him, he was pretty darn good. And now those Saints, they have better pieces around. They don't have Drew Brees, don't get me wrong. Drew Brees, Jameis Winston, they're two totally different quarterbacks. But if you look at the other pieces in place, Chris Olave's there. Jarvis Landry's there. Kamara's still there. Taysom Hill is now a viable tight end option for the Saints offense that can do all kinds of things. So the pieces around Thomas are going to be better than what they were prior to him being there. I don't know. I got him as basically a low-end two and a high-end three right now for fantasy. So somewhere in that 24 to 30 range.
ADP is probably a little bit of a steal, right? So ADP right now is probably coming off in that 8 to 10 round range. And so everybody's a little bit skeptical. I think he'll start to shoot up, so you'll have to be paying attention to where that ADP is going to go. So that's why this is kind of big news a little bit, because you're right, Matt. It's like you're not sure what you're going to deal with coming off of that injury, so be careful of your league mates pumping that guy back up, but take value where you can. The other news that I thought was very important coming out of camp is Zach Moss – let's keep the WWE theme going. Zach Moss, like the Undertaker, coming out and running with the ones in Bills camp today. And so, obviously, very early in training camp. I'm not going to put too much into it. But, Dave, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, as I think you and I both have been talking about Devin Singletary a little bit this year.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy anything into that. They've shown, you know, for years that they don't trust Zach Moss, and that was kind of a fumbled selection. You know, I had someone joking around yesterday. A guy sent a really bad trade offer, and my buddy's like, man, this guy's really getting on my crap list. And I said, he must have saw that Clyde Edwards-Helaire went on the PUP, and he also hopes that you don't understand that a training camp PUP list means it can come off any time. So today, when, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was practicing, I sent him the tweet and said, hey, Edwards is practicing today, so go send him a reverse Ronald Jones trade that's not crazy. Yeah, I wanted like Calvin Ridley and something else for like Ronald Jones. Like, it was just like embarrassing.
JJ, what do you think on that? I know you and I both were on the Devin Singletary train too. You feel the same as Dave?
Listen, I was banging the Zach Moss drum last offseason. I thought that he was going to get a good shot. I thought he was going to be the between the tackle banger for that team. And then he got benched and didn't even play week one. He wasn't active. And I was like, oh, yep, that's because I'm an idiot. And I should pay attention more. So do not believe. No, thank you. No, thank you.
I'm out. I hear you. Well, look, in final news, the last thing I wanted to bring it full circle with some position things and go to the quarterback position. So Geno Smith is taking first team snaps with the Seattle Seahawks starting camp. So where do we think that may shake out? Because we kind of just came out of our camp battle discussion. And if I'm jumping the gun here, JJ, let me know. But, nope. You know, around that Geno Smith and Drew Lock conversation, what are we thinking, Matt?
I mean, I don't think there's a conversation about it. Drew Lock is horrible. I mean, there's no question. I mean, it was nice to see Russell Wilson come out to a Drew Lock jersey there for training camp, sporting the number three for him. But when I look at these numbers last year, Drew Lock just can't hit anything. I mean, the accuracy is just not there, which if he did play, probably benefits DK Metcalf being a bigger body there with a bigger catch radius. But if you look at the numbers here in the four-game sample size that we had Geno Smith under center for, it wasn't like Metcalf was bad. He had 19 receptions, 296 yards, 5 touchdowns. That's not a bad 4-game stretch there. So you know if Geno Smith is under center, DK Metcalf is going to get his. Now, with Tyler Lockett, on the other hand, the numbers were the same, but they all came against the Jaguars in one game. So in that same 4-game stretch, again, that's basically been Tyler Lockett in a shell, right? 100-yard game here, 25-yard game here, 100-yard game when it's all said and done. I think Geno Smith, and here's the key, here's the deal, here's the thing right now with the whole Seahawks thing. Geno Smith has that locker room. The players there want to play for Geno Smith. He's been there, he's done that, he's respected in that locker room. The guys like him, and that goes a long way, especially when you're trying to determine this quarterback battle, especially when they're close. I don't, like I said, Drew Locke would have to be far better than Geno Smith, and that's not the case. I mean, even if somehow Jimmy Garoppolo ended in Seattle, I know we've seen those rumors coming around. Either way, no matter how you want to look at it, the quarterback of the future for the Seahawks is not on this roster. It may very well be a C.J. Stroud. It very well may be a Bryce Young or a Spencer Rattler or one of these quarterbacks, Will Levis, coming out of Kentucky. It might be one of those guys next year that we see in Seattle, because none of these guys are the answer right now. But Geno Smith can get the job done in parts. He's not. I don't think he can be that full-time starter, but I mean, if he could channel his inner Trent Dilfer, you know, kind of manage a game. I mean, Seattle's defense is nowhere near some of these great defenses that we've seen with game managers. But I mean, that's basically the best option right now in Seattle.
I think to summarize, Matt, Drew Lock is terrible, and we probably should just leave it at that, right?
I mean, so he's got the moves.
We're gonna close up our training camp battle with the last position we got here. So I want to throw it back to you, my friend.
You know, I'm going to pause on that 1 second and mention Julio Jones, right, to the Bucs. I mean, everybody thought Green Bay, maybe the Colts. Everybody was banging the Russell Gage drum. Now, I don't necessarily think, Matt, that this takes Gage out of the discussion for this year, because I don't know if they're going to play the same role. But where are you on Julio?
I think Julio makes a great tight end. I really do. I think we're still going to see, they might not actually have a tight end on the field, but I think they're going to use Julio similar to how they use Rob Gronkowski. I think that's basically what Julio's role is going to be. Look for Russell Gage to play that Antonio Brown role, and look for Mike Evans and Chris Godwin to do what they do best. I still think Julio is basically insurance for Chris Godwin, because we don't know what we're getting back out of Chris Godwin. He tore his ACL 8 months ago. There's not been very many players historically who've come back from an ACL injury. Here I am, injury doctor, and performed well after 8 months. I mean, Rob Gronkowski, I think, was the last guy to come within 8 months, and he was only on getting about a 60% snap share when he got on the field. So maybe, I mean, modern science has come a long ways, but I don't expect Chris Godwin to get a heavy workload off the get-go. So, I mean, there's Julio Jones. I mean, $6 million 1 year. He's not necessarily a guarantee to make this team out of camp. I mean, that is a very – I can cut that and not lose anything right now. So if Julio Jones looks anything like he did towards Tennessee there last season, don't be surprised if they just cut him. But then again, Tom Brady, he don't care. If Tom Brady wanted him, Tom Brady's going to get him. He got Ocho Cinco there that did absolutely nothing in New England a few years back. This could be the same thing with Julio Jones. Or you may be getting an absolute steal with Julio Jones as a Rob Gronkowski type guy who's going to be that red zone target for the Buccaneers. Because we know, like Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay – likes to throw the ball. Tampa Bay threw the ball more than any other team, 43.9 times per game on average. And they like to push the ball down the field a little bit more. So, I mean, it's a little bit better offense in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, there's some value that could be had with Julio Jones. I'm not willing to take that risk on it yet.
Dave?
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity to go grab Russell Gage. Even if Chris Godwin is active week one, I still think it's going to take a few weeks for him to get acclimated and get ready to go. Like Matt said, it's really, you know, people saw it's kind of slipped in there. Like Julio signed and Chris Godwin didn't go to the PUP. And it's like, that might've been bigger news, but it may not be. Because you're cleared to practice doesn't mean that you're going to be practicing in full, you know, like James Robinson's practicing. He's going to be doing individual drills on the sideline. He's not going to be, you know, in pads doing any of that stuff for a long time. So, like, I'm not worried about that. Like, for ETN, I'm not worried about that. And, like, Russell Gage, he's going to get the AB role, just like Matt said. And Julio, yeah, like, Mike Evans has missed time in the past. If Mike Evans were to miss role, then, you know, Julio can play outside. They, you know, could always use another guy. But I do think he's going to be more of just a red zone guy. My question to you guys is, you know, I know, like, when you see a league mate add somebody, you're kind of like, is Julio a landmine? Like, the Packers and the Colts and the Cowboys just, you know, they just let Julio Jones go somewhere else. And two of those teams are in the NFC. And when you see an NFC team get better, that hurts you. But did they avoid it to, you know, a landmine situation where, like, let someone else deal with it, and Julio Jones can have three great games on Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year, and he'll miss the rest with hamstring injuries.
Matt, what did he sign for? I didn't see the contract today.
One for six.
$6 million. I think that's the reason, Dave. I think most of these teams that you just mentioned are looking to add somebody for a low number with incentives, right? Playing incentives, give them more depending. I don't think Julio is willing to take one of those deals.
Well, I think the interesting one was Indianapolis. I mean, Indianapolis needs receivers. I'm not big on Alec Pierce this year. I mean, it's going to take him. I think he's a boom bust kind of guy. We know what Michael Pittman can get do. Then what do you got? Paris Campbell, who's played three seasons and played 16 games. And Matt Ryan is in Indianapolis. So I thought, and they have cap room. They actually have cap room, unlike some of these other teams. So it was a bit of a shock not to see Julio go to the Indianapolis Colts. Green Bay, they've never really been that player when it comes to free agent wide receivers. So that doesn't really surprise me there so much. So who knows?
Well, does that tell, to your point, JJ, though, exactly what Matt just said, does that tell you exactly what the writing on the wall is? The Indianapolis Colts need a wide receiver, have cap space, have Matt Ryan, who played with Julio Jones for years, and they still did not sign him. So is he that kind of fantasy grenade where it's like, maybe there was a dodged bullet there? I think to me, honestly, he's more of a fantasy subtractor than he is an addition, because I was creeping Mike Evans up, honestly, in my top 5 to 7 wide receivers. I was thinking he was going to be a guy – honestly, that could maybe flirt with Randy Moss type numbers from a touchdown perspective with Tom Brady this coming year. Julio throws a wrench in that. Maybe he doesn't break camp and it's still the same, but we won't know that until camp actually breaks, and that's going to be after our draft. So we really have to be careful with where Mike Evans starts to creep up, where Chris Godwin creeps up, and take value where we can.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you one thing right now there. Sorry, JJ. I know one thing right now. Brady's going to throw more than 40 touchdowns because he needs 39 more to break the Buccaneers all-time record in only his third
season. Is that it?
That's it.
Wow.
You mean even with my 30 for 30 man, Jameis Winston, all Brady's got to do is throw 39 more touchdowns?
39 ties it. Yep.
There's going to be a 50 TD season coming up, isn't there? God, can we – never mind. I'm not going to talk about Brady. All right, that's my mantra. All right. Well, gentlemen, it's time to go back to tight ends. In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. That's right. We're going to New Orleans. Now, there's a little bit of a battle right now between Adam Trautman and Taysom Hill. Matt, you mentioned Taysom Hill, but I have to ask you, why in the hell is Mr. 47 career targets going 5 rounds before Trautman, who's an actual tight end?
Because Troutman's not very good. I mean, again, I'll go with the Drew Locke kind of thing here. What we've seen so far in Trautman right now, he had a good 3-week stretch between weeks 9 and 11 in which he posted 14 catches, 137 yards, and a touchdown. He only had 20, and he had 21 targets in that span. But you look at everything else to date, he has just 42 catches in 28 career games right now. 27 in the last 13 games. So if you're looking for offensive production, it's not coming from Trautman. And you know Taysom Hill. Why is Taysom Hill going ahead of them? Because you could literally have a tight end playing quarterback at some point this season. You know, when this Saints team gets down in that red zone, this Wildcat offense or this Taysom offense or whatever you want to call it, he's going to be under center. There's going to be times where he takes it and calls his own number. So you're going to get rushing touchdowns. You're going to get receiving touchdowns. You're probably going to get a touchdown pass here and there. You're not going to get that from Adam Trautman. It's not going to happen. You may get 2 touchdowns out of Trautman, but I'm looking at his history numbers here right now. And yeah, he's on the field. Those last 13 games, he had an 80% offensive snap rate, but he didn't do nothing with it, right? There's no production. The production doesn't match the promise. And I like Troutman. I think he's a Dayton boy, right? That's where he came out of University of Dayton there, setting all kinds of records, receiving records. We haven't seen that translate. Taysom Hill, was he like 38 years old now or something? I don't know what it is. He's a little bit older there because of his BYU roots there and everything that kind of goes with that. But he's still that unknown that he can give you that production here. And if you're in best ball, I mean, if you're making best ball, Taysom Hill is an absolute wild card for you.
Dave, where are you?
Yeah, I'm going to avoid both these guys. At the end of the day, the golden ticket to being a top tight end is being number, one or two on your team in targets. And these guys are going to be three and four, if not five, on their targets. You're going to have so much inconsistency. At best, you might stream one of these guys, but you're going to be really pushing your luck to try to guess when Taysom Hill's going to go off or when Adam Troutman's going to have that one good week. So I'm just going to avoid. I know that you're really not having to pay up for these guys, but even then, I don't need three or four tight ends on my roster. So the only time I'd ever have these guys is best ball. And Taysom Hill, I was actually talking to someone. Taysom Hill, I know Andy Dalton's the backup. It's not, not Taysom Hill. But Taysom Hill would really throw the whole Scott Fishbowl to a loop if something crazy would have happened. And in a tight end premium league and a super flex league, Taysom Hill happens to be the quarterback, weeks 8 through 16 or something like that.
I mean, Troutman's going to be on the field 80% of the time, but there's still Juwan Jennings. He's still there too. Juwan Jennings, I think, had more touchdowns than Adam Troutman did last year. I think he had two in the first three games or something like that. Yeah.
Juwan Johnson, I think.
Johnson, yeah. Sorry.
Just one other thing. I'm not going to beat a dead horse here. They're absolutely correct, my colleagues here. But the one thing I would potentially do, if you have a deep bench in Dynasty, I'd potentially stash Troutman, not for this year. So obviously, you can't put him on a taxi squad or anything like that. But if you have some room to maybe stash him, I think he has actual talent. If he makes it out of New Orleans, he could potentially get on somewhere and be something. I kind of consider him like a Kyle Rudolph. He reminds me a lot of Kyle Rudolph early in his career. So I think it's just situation more that he's getting, downgraded, not really talent-esque.
Well, how many tight ends have you seen? How many tight ends have you seen produce in the first three seasons? Right? It just doesn't typically happen. Yeah, Kyle Pitts did what he did, but typically the tight end position takes a little bit longer to develop coming out of college. We've seen this time and time again. Troutman's entering that third season. Is he there yet? I don't know. It may take one more season before we see that offensive production from him.
We have a comment from the Peanut Gallery. Gary Van Dyke said his local Dayton Flyer stud, Troutman, will break out this year in year three, but he's not drafting him. But he's sticking with his call. He just won't draft him. Well, I'm not sure who is going to be standing on the corner in Winslow, Arizona, but the Cardinals traded for Zach Ertz mid-season last year and then drafted Trey McBride in the second. Is there a competition, Matt, or is this settled?
This is settled right now for this year. But, man, Zach Ertz has got to be like, again? Really? We're going to do this again? He just went through this in Philadelphia with Dallas Goedert there. He performed well. I mean, they were able to play back and forth and get some production out of both of them. But, I mean, you get a guy coming in right now who was the consensus number one tight end coming out of the draft, coming after your spot once again. But you look at what Ertz was able to do. I don't think any of us saw Ertz have that revival that he had last season coming. He was performing well in Philadelphia, then got traded to Arizona, and then it took off for him right now, where he got to basically, he was a top five fantasy asset for his Arizona Cardinals team. New offense, he still had a 19% target share. He had 74 receptions on 112 targets, and I like to evaluate my dynasty assets in 3 to 4 year windows, and I think Ertz still gives you that right now. But now I also want to talk about return of investment right now, especially when it comes to Ertz. You have a 6-week sell period right now. If you want to move on for him right now, he's 31 years old. If you're not quite into it, DeAndre Hopkins is gone, right? He's missed those first 6 weeks. That means you're going to see, and Marquise Hollywood-Brown is already dealing with a hamstring injury, but that's for another show, another day. But in the final four weeks of the season with Hopkins not there, that target share actually went to 24%. He was a tight end for that period there, that 4-week period. So you're going to have an opportunity to move on from him. Hey, if you want to still compete this year, I mean, if you're in redraft, I think Ertz is definitely a top, I'll say a top six, top seven tight end. But in dynasty right now, this is your opportunity to move on from. You're going to get production week three, week four, week five. Hang on to him as long as you want. Let that draft capital kind of build up inside him and then move on from him to find a someone who's a contender or whatever that looks like. And then it's going to be Trey McBride. I think it's going to be next year or the year after. I think McBride's still two or three seasons out.
Justin, are you on the same page?
I am. You know, Trey McBride's athletic profile is through the roof. I think he's going to be a really good prospect for them in a couple of years. I agree with everything Matt just said from a dynasty perspective. For our redraft fans that potentially see this pod, just keep in mind that if you draft Zach Ertz, just ride that 5 or 6 week wave and sell high.
Yeah, great, great information. Definitely going to do that. Now, down to Tampa Bay. Tommy is getting all types of weapons down in Florida, which is common for a Florida man. But after the retirement of Gronk, the Bucs have drafted Kate Otten and signed Kyle Rudolph, leaving the kind of three-way mess that you don't want to be a part of. Dave, Brady loves tight ends, but where do you think these targets are going to go?
Yeah, I mean, even if Brady does have a, you know, 45 touchdown season, I don't think you're going to have a consistent tight end option here. Again, I talked about being a top one or two on your team in targets. None of these guys are going to do that, especially with the addition of Julio Jones. Like, Kyle Rudolph made it worse. Julio Jones made it worse. And, like, Kate Otten, yeah, keep him for the future. But in the future, there's going to be no Brady, you know? So, like, I'm not interested at all in these tight ends. You know, if you're in a best ball format or in some type of a tournament, yeah, these might be guys you want to throw a late dart throw on. You know, we've seen Cameron Brate catch, you know, he was catching touchdowns from Jameis Winston. You know, he's caught a lot of touchdowns in his past. We've seen Kyle Rudolph, but Kyle Rudolph also has, you know, caught like what, one touchdown last two seasons. Kate Otten's never played a snap in the NFL. I'm staying away from this. I think Mike Evans, Russell Gage, and all those guys are going to soak up all those, you know, touchdowns.
And Lenny, Fat Lenny. Matt, you have to pick one. Who are you picking?
If I have to pick one, I got to go with Cameron Brate because he's already been there, done that with this offense. I mean, he's already got the rapport with Tom Brady there. I mean, I can't discredit Kyle, the red zone reindeer. We know what he's been able to do in his past. I mean, on Monday, Sleeper basically told us he was going to inherit a bulk of the load, right? We just got that on Sleeper on Monday. But let's be honest, everything that we see here, I still believe that Julio Jones is the tight end of the Buccaneers. When you're looking at what Gronkowski kind of left behind last year, 55 catches, 802 yards, 14.6 yards per reception, 89 targets, had a 17.6% target share. He finished tight end 3 for fantasy points per game. He tied for the second highest ADOT amongst tight ends there at 10.9. That doesn't sound like anything that Cameron Brate, Kyle Rudolph, or Kate Otten is going to give you. That sounds like a Julio Jones type thing. So, I mean, we talked about that off the top. I don't want to get into it too much. But if I had to pick one of these guys, it would be Cameron Brate just because he's been there, done that in this Bucs offense.
Yeah, the familiarity is what you really look for, right? You want somebody who's been there and has the rapport with
It's all trust
Brady.
With Brady, right?
Yeah.
All trust with Brady.
All right, gentlemen, let's finish the tight end battles with my favorite team, my beloved New York Jets. Now, nobody's excited about CJ Uzomah or Tyler Conklin because the Jets only targeted the position 74 times last season. However, Mike LaFleur comes from San Francisco where they averaged 125 tight end targets during his 4 years as passing game coordinator. Matt, if I told you one of these two gentlemen is going to get 80 or more targets, would you be interested?
80 or more targets? I mean, we've seen what Tyler Conklin was able to do last season with what he was able to do. I mean, he had 61 receptions last year, 593 yards, 3 touchdowns with Minnesota. That was with Kirk Cousins and whatnot. But still, we know that Tyler Conklin can do this kind of stuff. CJ Uzomah, he's also coming off a bit of an injury there prior to the Super Bowl. So is he 100%? Probably, maybe. I don't know. But if I'm looking at the ADP right now, we're looking at this right now, you're getting Conklin later, both on the expert consensus rankings, on the ADP, on Underdog. ESPN doesn't even have them on their rankings, for crying out loud. If I was to take a shot at one of these two, it'd be on Conklin here on a little bit of that upside as compared to CJ Uzomah. Chances are I'm not playing either one of them, but at least I know Tyler Conklin is probably going to make it through the season, where I'm not sure if CJ Uzomah or where he's going to be at come the start of the season. Neither one of these guys is a guy I want in my lineup, even in a two tight end league or tight end premium or whatever it is. I'm not going to go to one of these guys, maybe as a bye week filler. I mean, that might be the best option for one of these guys. I got a bunch of notes to talk about, but I feel like talking about Tyler Conklin and CJ Uzomah for any extended period of time may be a waste of everyone's time right now.
Might be hazardous to your health. Dave.
Same thing I've been saying. I mean, it just all of these guys we've been talking about are like streaming tight ends. And so like these guys, you're not going to want to target in your drafts. And when you figure out maybe who's the guy, you might stream when you say, okay, they're playing the Texans this week, or they're playing against the Jets this week. It's a situation like that. They're playing against my Giants this week. But Conklin is, you know, Conklin appears to be the receiving option here. But, you know, again, I think he's probably fifth or sixth in line. If for you know, a situation where they have Breece Hall, Michael Carter, Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, Braxton Berrios, Corey Davis, it's just, yeah, I don't see either of these guys being fantasy relevant week to week.
And you wanted to say something about Zach Wilson, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, and I wanted to bring up, you know, another QB target, and I looked at my, you know, my breakout article, and Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence are both on there. And the reason I brought up Zach Wilson is because he's cheaper. You got to pay a little bit more for Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, we talked about return on investment. It's always an easier return when you pay less. And with Zach Wilson, you're not having to pay a lot. And they've done a really nice job of building around him. Not only are they giving him weapons in the passing game, they gave him the most people's number one receiver. You know, not everybody's, but most people's number one or number two receiver, the number one running back in Breece Hall, and they already had Elijah Moore on the roster. Last year, they added a center in Connor McGovern. They added Elijah Vera Tucker.
Yep.
And then this year, they went and got, you know, got a right tackle, added a Lakin Tomlinson, who's familiar with the system, did really well in San Francisco. They're building the right way. Like, they're building an offensive line to protect him, and they're giving him weapons. You know, they're doing everything that we wish they would do for Justin Fields.
I'll take that. Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for.
I mean,
for.
I think the thing we got to watch here, JJ, in the offseason is like Matthew Stafford going for breakfast with Cooper Kupp. I mean, we got to see if Zach Wilson's going to breakfast with Mrs. Uzomah or Mrs. Conklin.
I was going to say, you don't want to go to breakfast with Zach Wilson, or you might sleep with your mom. I mean, come on now. Got to watch that little fella. All right. Well, now that we're finished with tight ends, is anybody, Matt, can you give me a trade target?
I mean, I'm still all in. I got a guy there right now that I think is still being criminally underrated in Houston, and that is Brevin Jordan. I mean, I like to go into the value bin. I like to jump in the garbage bin there when it comes to players. And I'm looking at Brevin Jordan here right now, and everything about him screams value. And it's just, especially now with, prayers out to John Michie and everything that he's dealing with right now. He's going to come back better than ever when it's all said and done. He's got everyone in his corner right now. But that's another one less mouth to feed in Houston right now, which means more targets funnel towards Brevin Jordan. I seriously think Brandon Cooks is going to end up with 150 targets when it's all said and done in this offense. I don't know what we've got in Nico Collins. I mean, I think we've got potential. He's big. He's a big target. He can separate. He has got a good catch radius. But for me, it's all about Brevin Jordan. I mean, I've been on this train for a few seasons now. Like last year, I kind of got into it. He's on my dynasty mustache kind of list. But you look at what he was at during weeks 12 to 16. He's only 21 years old, so you're going to get value here right now. 13 of 18 targets, 112 yards, two of his three touchdowns came in that span. In that period, he averaged 9.1 fantasy points per game, which was more than Mike Gesicki, Evan Ingram, and even Noah Fant in that period of time. And no one talks about Brevin Jordan in that same breath. We're talking about Brevin Jordan right now as tight end. What? Where's he going? 26 in Dynasty right now? If that's what we're looking at right now. This is a guy you're getting for free. Who doesn't like free? My old man used to say to me all the time, anything free is worth saving up for. Well, Brevin Jordan right now is free, and you're going to get a return of your investment on him no matter what. He's a number one tight end on a team that's going to pass the ball.
Fantastic. Dave.
Yeah, I'm still on Irv Smith. You know, and I love all the offensive changes. We talked about Kirk Cousins. You know, the Rams, back when McVay was in Washington, I mean, they've always used the tight ends well in that offense, and I think it's going to be no different. We saw Tyler Conklin do well with Kirk Cousins. I don't think it's going to be any different. Adam Thielen's getting a little older, older in age. I don't know if he's going to demand as many targets as, you know, he's done in the past. And we'll see about, KJ Osborne. And, you know, I think KJ Osborne could be the biggest threat to Irv Smith. But one of those guys is going to be number three in the targets in this, you know, offense that we expect to be a lot more high-powered this year. And you're getting Irv Smith at tight end 17. So I think, you know, people are just – they're kind of sick of the Irv Smith breakout. But when he was on the field, yards per route run – He was well above average, and this is a guy that, you know, when he's on the field, he's not there to block. He's there to do some damage in the receiving game, and I think he's going to do a lot this year.
And he's somebody who caused a lot of pain to the people who bought the hype last year. They traded for him. They heard he was a sleeper. They added to the roster, and then he got injured. So you might be able to get him for a lot less than you think, because people got hurt and burnt by him last year. Matt, Brevin Jordan is going as the tight end 32.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. There's not 31 tight ends right now better than Brevin Jordan. And I like you mentioned there, Irv Smith. I literally just traded Anthony Firkster and Jalen Petrie there from the Houston Texans safety for Brevin Jordan, or for Irv Smith Jr., sorry. So, really? I mean, Irv Smith, there's people that are down on him right now. Like you said, I'm buying this dip. I'm going right now and buying dip everywhere. Dip? What's the worst going to happen? I'm not using anything. It's not costing me anything to acquire talent, right?
All right. And Justin, do you have anybody you want to talk about?
I do. And it's one that most fantasy folks don't want to hear about anymore. And that's Evan Engram in Jacksonville. So, obviously, most of us have been burned by Evan Engram in his career. He can't stay healthy. But I am very intrigued in the offensive setup that he is now in with Doug Peterson. So, if you take the last 3 years that Doug Peterson was a head coach, the lowest target amount for the tight end position in his offense was 137 targets in 2020. The highest of those targets in 2019 was 225. That's a lot of volume to go around in an offense that I'm not really terrified about any of those wide receivers taking from the tight end position. Evan Engram has been an athletic profile type guy that we know can get the job done. It's all about, will the injury bug not cost him snaps? Can he stay on the field? And so at his current ADP, which ranking wise, he's coming in at tight end 21, I will snatch up all of that opportunity and just see if he's a lottery ticket that can cash.
Fantastic. Anybody have another tight end target they want to throw in, Matt?
Well, I won't throw necessarily a tight end target, but we've watched this tight end position for so long right now. It's a wasteland. It really is. So why wouldn't you take a shot of these guys on the back end and hope you get yourself a Logan Thomas, a Dawson Knox, someone that we're not talking about right now, rising through the ashes to get right back to where they need to be. And I think that's why we're talking about guys like Evan Engram, Brevin Jordan, Irv Smith Jr., who we haven't really seen a whole heck of a lot of. Right now, Brevin Jordan, I've got him as my tight end 17, and Irv Smith is my tight end 13 in redraft. So if I'm high on them in redraft and they're young, both of them, I'm going to be even higher on them when it comes to dynasty. Every year we see a tight end come out of nowhere that no one's expecting. 2 years ago, like I said, it was Logan Thomas. No one saw that coming. No one predicted Dawson Knox last season. So these are guys that you got to watch for. Look deep down on your roster right now. Go a little bit deeper. Who are those tight ends? And you're going to find someone who's going to have value somewhere along the way.
And that's why you need to pay attention to training camp, pay attention to preseason games, and week one. Start making your moves and be active on the waiver wire. Don't be one of those fantasy managers who just disappears and doesn't put in claims. You're going to find out who's getting the targets, and you need to be listening in order to get them. All right, gentlemen, it is time for tags to let everybody know where they can find us and any final thoughts. We'll start with Matt.
I was just going to say, I know that both guys below here on the screen there, they both have another tight end they want to get in there real quick. So I'll let them have their final words. Let's kind of slide that tight end in.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I'll just start off with just saying again, look for targets. 100% of the 100% of the guys with 100-plus targets last year made it as a top 12 tight end. So look for guys that are going to get targets, and I like the Evan Engram call. And Cole Kmet's that guy. So Cole Kmet is likely going to be the number two tight end in his offense, a number two target in his offense. Mm-hmm. And tight end, you know, touchdown regression is on the way. Even if, you know, Fields throws less than 20 touchdowns, which I expect, you can't, Mooney's not going to get all of them. And God forbid Mooney went down. Knock on wood for all the Mooney shares. But man, that would be an ugly, ugly receiver room. I think, you know, Cole Kmet is in a 30-year breakout. Tight ends usually don't, you know, takes a little while. I like that one. Then at Dynasty Dorks on all my stuff. Thanks for having me.
I was able to get Kmet in the 13th round of the mock I just did as my second tight end, and laughed all the way to the bank. Justin?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be on brand if I didn't say something homerish in one of our podcasts, JJ. But as JJ and I have told everyone, from a dynasty perspective, we have started to look at it in a 2 and 3 year window. And another late round throw in that I like to say is Gerald Everett going into the Chargers offense. So he's replacing Jared Cook, who had over 80 plus targets in an offense led by Justin Herbert, who should be a 30, 35 plus touchdown type quarterback this year. So he's one to definitely throw in. You can find me at Twitter at JFHornets25, and you can find me on the Rod Pod podcast weekly here going forward.
All right. Well, thank you to Matt Donnelly for joining us tonight. Make sure you're following him at Matt Donnelly FF and subscribing to his Patreon to check out his latest content. Really, it's top notch. Thank you to Dave, Justin, and Rob for helping to put together this show. And a special shout out to Dave on his final show as my co-host. Dave came in when I was ready to pull the plug and re-energize this pod. Your professionalism, your positive energy are going to be missed. I wish you all the best, my friend, as you continue to build your brand with SGPN. So a heartfelt thank you to you. You can find me on Twitter at JJ Wenner. I don't know why you would want to, but you can find me there. make sure you're checking out Gridiron Ratings for all of our content. Tomorrow on Getting Defensive, Gary and I will be talking to IDP Sleepers with Joey the Tooth and Matt Schaaf. The Chop Shop on Saturday with Ronnie and Jeff. And next week on the Rod Pod, we're welcoming Mauricio Gutierrez and Santiago Casanova to talk some impact rookies and ranking strategy. So from all of us to all of you, be safe, be well, and as always, boat drinks, my friends. Boat drinks. Have a great night.